culture, you can get it every week right here on Music Time in Africa. So join me on your local FM station, Saturdays and Sundays at 1500 and 2000.
This is VOA News via remote. I'm Tommy McNeil. George Floyd's brother is challenging Congress to stop the pain, testifying on Capitol Hill that Floyd's death should not be in vain. Philonise Floyd testified at a U.S. House hearing on proposed changes to police practices and accountability. He asked lawmakers to make sure his brother is not just another name on a growing list of those killed during interactions with police. Floyd says he hopes his brother's death changes the world for the better. George Floyd's death in police hands and police custody in Minneapolis sparked worldwide protest. House Democrats have proposed a sweeping package of changes in police oversight and accountability. U.S. President Donald Trump says he's ruling out changing the name of Army bases, named for Confederate Army officers. This comes 2 days after Defense Secretary Mark Esper indicated he is open to a discussion of such changes, which have been urged by prominent retired Army officers and others. The issue has arisen periodically, but it is gaining attention as the nation wrestles with questions of race after the death of George Floyd. In a series of tweets, Mr. Trump wrote that my administration would not even consider changing those Army base names. Buffalo, New York's mayor has now announced several changes to police practices amid widespread calls for racial equality and police accountability. The mayor, Byron Brown, says the city will hold arrests for low-level nonviolent offenses like marijuana possession and make it easier for the public to view police body camera video under reforms announced. The city will also replace its police emergency response team with a new public protection unit after two members of the former unit were videotaped shoving a 75-year-old protester who fell and cracked his head. This is VOA News. Globally, the number of people who have died from COVID-19 virus is more than 416,000, and more than 112,000 of those deaths are in the United States. The number of infections is well above 7.3 million globally and more than 2 million in the United States. Brazil's numbers continue to surge, with the third highest number of deaths trailing just behind the UK. But as far as infections go, Brazil is second behind the United States. Oh, President Trump says that he is planning to hold his first rally of the coronavirus era on June 19th in Tulsa, Oklahoma. And he says he's planning more events in Florida, Texas, and Arizona as well. Mr. Trump made the announcement during a roundtable discussion with African-American supporters. His signature rallies often draw tens of thousands of people, but have been on hiatus since March 2nd because of the coronavirus pandemic, which has now killed, again, more than 110,000 people. And the rally takes place on Juneteenth, the commemoration of the ending of slavery in the United States. Tulsa has its own troubling history on race. Hawaii Governor David Ige extended the state's mandatory 14 bid to keep coronavirus cases in the islands low. That the rule is being extended to the end of July as the state works to solidify the screening process that could soon allow travelers to return in some airplane to install thermal screening stations with facial recognition in the airports by the end of the year. As among the lowest COVID-19 infection and mortality rates in the nation, Ige enacted a mandatory quarantine for arriving tourists and residents in March. Some violators of the quarantine rules have been changed. EU officials now say that Facebook, Google, and Twitter should provide monthly reports on their fight against fake news as they call out Russia and China for spreading information, particularly the novel coronavirus broke out. The next fake news front is vaccination, with a study showing Germans' willingness to be vaccinated for points in just 2 months. That was according to European Commission's Vice President of Values and Transparency, said COVID-19 has underscored how fake news harms health, democracies, and citizens, impacts the economy, and undermines the government response. Facebook, Google, Twitter, and Mozilla are among signatories to a voluntary EU code of conduct. Via remote, I'm Tom McNeil, VOA News.
Good morning, affordable comcast for 25 America and but Washington based there June 11th. And here are some of the stories covering Latin, one of what makes legacy, the Burundian president Nkurunziza.
When we have agreed to Arusha agreement, it has been agreed that he will follow
the
Arusha agreement.
He has been dismissed. The surrender of a former leader boosted the ICC by others before crimes in Darfur. He launches a hasty action to slow the spread of COVID-19. Zambian broke Catholic bishop calls for withdrawal of the country for the date of Malawi's court-mandated presidential election.
The bill passed, needed two-thirds majority on board. So as we speak, it has been shut down because they want the party to our constitution.
Maurice Mutale is National Publicity Secretary for the Ocean Malawi. Zabu seeks to amend his constitution to give more power to those there are more are coming up on the program. This sudden death of outgoing Burundian president Pierre Nkurunziza on Tuesday came as a shock to everyone on the African political scene. With an iron fist for 15 years, including a controversial killed in protests and more than 500,000 fleeing the country, some expect nothing will change in terms of how Burundi handles its governance issues.
Death of President Pierre Nkurunziza, who died Monday. Government said Nkurunziza died from cardiac arrest, but there is speculation the cause may have been COVID-19, the disease caused by the coronavirus. Local media reported the late president's wife was flown to a Nairobi hospital last week after contracting the virus. Nkurunziza was due to step down in August and hand power to the winner of last month's election, retired Army General Evariste Ndayishimiye. Domitien Ndayizeye handed power to Nkurunziza in 2005 at the end of Burundi's civil war. He says the main task given to Nkurunziza was to implement a political agreement between the Hutu majority and Tutsi.
When he come to power, we have just managed to agree that he follow to implement the Arusha agreement. His best, maybe there has been some issues and he has not been able to work, and I think it will go.
The agreement signed in Tanzania and a civil war that claimed lives and 300,000 people. Some opposition politicians accused the late president of violating the constitution when he ran for a third term in 2015. His government was also accused of unleashing the ruling party youth wing, known as Imbonerakure, on Rice Watch.
Most of my time I was documenting abuse committed by Imbonerakure, which were the youth militia aligned with the ruling CNDD-FDD party. And many of these crimes, if you will, but really what we're seeing post 2015, giving the green light for these Imbonerakure, these youth militias, we see them really become used as the enforcers across the country. The rise of the Imbonerakure will be in Nkurunziza's district.
In 2017, Burundi became the first country to withdraw from the court after being accused of committing crimes against humanity. It also closed offices of the United Nations on Human Rights and in MEX World Health Organization. Last week, for journalists were imprisoned to terms of 2.5 years for investigating political unrest in the west of the country. Marge said the human rights situation may not improve with the passing of Nkurunziza.
We're going to see much change with the death of Nkurunziza with regards to human rights standards. It went beyond just one individual. I think we're unfortunately looking at Dr. Head.
Maleke van der Waal, deputy director for Central Africa at the National Crisis Group, says the future of Burundi depends on what the political system.
He was extremely influential because he was appointed Supreme Court of Fascism, so it was likely on the political scene in Burundi. So with his death, that he at least has more freedom of movement to act more independently. But then again, Nkurunziza is a man, and his rule was underpinned by a political system. The system is still very much in place.
For now, the Speaker of Parliament will be in charge of the affairs of the state on August 12th. Mavia News, Nairobi.
This warlock, Aiku Shahid, to the National Criminal Court, has raised hopes that for crimes in Sudan's Darfur region could be turned over to today's President Omar al-Bashir. Sudanese officials in February said that former officials, including Bashir, would face trial at the ICC. Naba Muhyiddin has reaction from Khartoum.
International Criminal Court, ICC, after surrendering to authorities in the Central African Republic on Tuesday, Kosheb was a commander of a militia, Popular Defense Forces, also known as the Janjaweed, that attacked towns and villages of then-President Omar al-Bashir, tried to crush a rebellion that began in 2000, is now facing charges of war crimes and crimes against humanity. Kosheb's surrender that others wanted for crimes in Darfur could be turned over to the international as a defense lawyer for protesters arrested during demonstrations against earlier stated that it doesn't mind forming a hybrid court to sue the accused people of crimes in Darfur. But since the statement was issued, no serious steps or procedures were taken. The arrest of one of the accused people and the delivery of him to ICC hands in The Hague shall put an end to the lack of progress on this case. Kosheb is one of six men wanted by the ICC for crimes in Darfur. The list of suspects includes Bashir, who was ousted by the military last year after months of protest against his 30-year Iron Fisted rule. The ICC issued an arrest warrant for Bashir in 2008, accusing him of war crimes, genocide, and crimes against humanity. A Sudanese court sentenced him to 2 years in detention for corruption last December. There are reports in the media that Kosheb may be used as a witness against other war crime suspects, political and traditional government. Abdelghani says if Kosheb is used as a witness for the state regarding war crimes in Darfur, it will lead to political complications, especially that some military institutions might be involved in the conflict with Kosheb and other militias in committing war crimes and genocides in Darfur region. That step will definitely add confusion to the Sudanese political scene. The Darfur got more than 300,000 people and has left 2 million internally displaced. In a statement, ICC chief said Kosheb's surrender is a milestone in the court's dealings with the Darfur situation. She called on Sudanese authorities to ensure tangible justice for the victims in Darfur without delay and said ending impunity for atrocities is essential to achieving durable peace and security in Darfur. Naba Muhideen for VUA News, Khartoum.
The Kenyan Ministry of Health has launched home-based isolation that would allow COVID-19 patients to recover from home under government guidelines. Health Chief Administrative Secretary Rashid Aman said the move was taken to decongest health centers that are crowded with symptomatic patients. As Maureen Ojiambo reports from Nairobi, Kenya has so far recorded 3,000.
Mama, it's asymptomatic. Go through home-based isolation as a way of decongesting hospitals. Speaking in Nairobi, Kenya's Health Chief Administrative Secretary Rashid Aman, 8% of COVID-19 positive cases in hospitals are asymptomatic and managed at home. Aman said the patients will be more.
17% of infected persons, that is, within our hospitals, are either asymptomatic or mildly symptomatic. And based solution and care guidelines dictate this procedure eligibility. This medical monitoring, referral system to health facilities when the need arises.
The World Organization, WHO, recommends that all laboratory-confirmed cases should be handled in healthcare facilities. However, in cases where isolation is not possible in hospitals, home-based care can be recommended, especially for patients with mild symptoms. Mr. Mann said that those who live in informal settlement will receive healthcare service institutions that the ministry recommend as suitable for the care.
Home-based care in informal settlements where households require identification of institutions within the community is set to meet the regulations for providing such care. To succeed, Ministry of Health appeals to non-governments, for they are very much involved in work at the community level, to partner with us in this fight against COVID-19. Implementation of these guidelines begins immediately.
Today, Wednesday, Kenya 105 COVID-19 positive cases, bringing the total tally to 3,094. Mr. Mann said most of the cases reported are from
truck drivers at the various border points, particularly border points with Uganda border at Busia, are of great concern to us. And as a ministry, we are working very closely with the government of Busia to provide them with input that they may need for us to jointly address the situation there.
Health Ministry has earlier blamed Kenyans of not following government instructions in fight against COVID-19 and the risk they are may increase the number of infections in the country as some patients may defy best care guidelines. Reporting for VOA Kenya.
You're listening to David Africa on the Voice of America, Thursday, June 11th. It seems there's some confusion about when Malawi's court mandated fresh presidential election will be held. The policy to Ghana is too urgently to agree as Thursday. On Wednesday, members of the ruling Democratic Progressive Party, the DPP, reintroduced motion in the form of a bill, but it failed because it did not have to intervene to clarify. Maurice Mutai is the National Publicity Secretary of the Congress Party. As far as the opposition is concerned, June 23rd is...
On Tuesday, what happened was a motion was passed on the date of election, and the date, as we speak, is 23rd June. But what the government wanted was that must not be done soon. Rather, they wanted it to come as it to be signed by the president and then have the constitutional sections amended so that the elections, according to them, are constitutional in nature. But what did not happen was that the bill did not pass with the majority of the vote. So as we speak, the bill from the government has been shut down because they wanted Parliament to amend some of the sections of the Constitution. So what happened today, in brief, is that there is no bill that passed in Parliament in the election, rather agreed on the day yesterday through a motion in Parliament.
Is it likely that, say, the ruling party could challenge this in court?
If the government chooses for litigations, then we are going to delay the whole thing. The Parliament passed a motion, and that motion was about the date of election. And it is the same House that said, yes, we can go for that date. As to the other issues that relate to either the Constitution or the logistics, then those things can be sorted out either before the elections or even after, because we are looking at something that must be done rather than having to be hindered by some technicalities.
It doesn't seem to me that there's much time left because June 23rd is around the corner. Does the Malawi Congress Party hope to also seek clarification from the court?
The courts already said that the parliament should set a date for the election. That is what the ruling was all about from the Constitutional Court and the Supreme Court of Appeal. They asked Parliament to set a date, and the Parliament has set a date through a motion. And a motion is one of the procedures that the Parliament uses or goes through to reach a resolution. And a resolution by the majority of members of Parliament was reached at yesterday through a motion. So Malawi Congress Party is never going to seek any clarification because we already have a ruling that clarified everything else. The only remaining thing was that Parliament should set a date. So why should we go back to court as if we don't understand the ruling itself? We understand the ruling, and the one thing that Parliament had to do was only to set a date, and that Parliament has done. No need for us to seek any clarification. I just want to say one thing. There is nothing that is going to stop Malawians from changing the way things are run in this country. There is nothing that is going to stop the people's passion, the people's anxiety, the people's wish that we go to the polls. And anything that the government is going to do to derail this and to frustrate this process is going to add anger.
Maurice Mutale is the National Publicity Secretary for the main opposition Malawi Congress Party. He was speaking with us from the capital, Lilongwe. The Zambian Catholic Bishops' Conference is calling for the withdrawal of the Constitutional Amendment Bill 2019, also known as Bill Number 10. Among other provisions, the amendment seeks to revise the preamble to reaffirm the Christian character of Zambia, the electoral system for elections to the National Assembly. It also seeks to revise the period for the dissolution of the National Assembly and the period of hearing and determination of a presidential election petition. It also revises the functions of the Bank of Zambia. Father Cleophas Longu is the Secretary General of the Zambia Conference of Catholic Bishops. He says the bill should be immediately withdrawn because some provisions seek to divide.
In the bill, we have seen radical suggestion revision of the Constitution. We believe that that is going beyond the original intention of the bill. The process of coming up with the bill and observed that there wasn't an extensive consultation with the people and the owners of the Constitution.
The bishop cite provisions in the bill, say, for example, deputy system regarding mayors, council chairpersons, members, and the president. What are the concerns of the bishops with these provisions?
They noted that there are in there a number of clauses that are innocent, some which can be described to be progressive. However, all the retrogressive and innocent clauses are overcrowded by those provisions that are highly contentious, some which are questionable, and some where there is no consensus at all in terms of the people of Zambia agreeing on how they want to be governed. A question of reintroducing deputy ministers, for example, we believe that Zambia is not a rich country, so as to have a bloated cabinet. We believe that we are now struggling to have enough resources to go into social sectors like education, the provision of high quality health services to our people, simply because we are overly indebted.
You say that the bill is divisive. How is it divisive?
Prince of Catholic Bishops is alive to the fact that Zambia elections in 26 of the country and the red half of the country, just as in the Bill 10 of 2019, has added to the process of polarizing the Zambian community or society that is already highly polarized and divided. Partisan positions, they are not thinking of the country, but they are thinking of their a constitution should not be a political encapsulates only the views of one half of the must encapsulate the views and aspirations, the desires and the hopes, as well as the anxieties. A constitution-making process must be able to the entire country to think not of a not tribe, but national cause.
Secretary General of the Zambia Conference of Catholic Bishops, he was speaking. Zimbabwe's government is frantically trying to amend the constitution. More powers, with cabinet already approving the proposed amendment, the bill hands of parliament, which will start public consultation soon. Reporter Kuzai Navashe has details.
The move to amend the constitution is happening amid subdued activity while the country remains in a partial lockdown. Parliament recently released a schedule of amendment. Political analyst Rashid Mukundu says this is very telling.
The decision by the Parliament of Zimbabwe to prioritize public consultations on the constitutional amendment clearly showed the selective to policy issues and governance matters in Zimbabwe, because the constitutional amendment...
The amendment would give the president the sole mandate to appoint High Court and Supreme Court judges, among many other powers. Tawanda Chimini, with the Election Resource Center, questions the urgency of the bill.
What's the hurry? There is nothing that can be deemed extremely urgent for the country. From our own assessment, the bill basically seems hell-bent on consolidating power in the executive, more than anything. When you look at almost 20 other proposed changes, you can't ignore the fact that there is real potential that this bill is about the 2023 election. It's about consolidating preparation for the 2023 election.
Chimini says Zimbabwe's courts cast on consolidating power there.
If the executive has greater powers around appointment of judges, an election dispute is... Look at all our elections over the last 2-3 cycles. You realize by the figure.
He adds that the electoral dispute resolution mechanism is if this bill sails through. The proposal has been widely rejected by the dialogue or Pollard, which the president and his rule of.
This is being stampeded at a time when there is a lockdown. A lockdown. Ordinary Zimbabweans can't travel to public hearings to be heard on this. A constitutional too important to be rushed.
Munyaradzi Dodo, editor of Open Parley, an online publication that says pre-lockdown public hearings were not receiving much attention, a rubber stamp process. He adds that this amendment means nothing to ordinary Zimbabweans worried about bread and butter issues. For VOA, this is Kudzai Zinawashe from Harare.
And that's it for this Thursday, June 11th edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Stryak, as well as sports editor Samson O'Malley, along with all of our engineers.